Welcome to Real Money, Real Experts, a podcast where leading financial counseling and coaching experts share their stories, their challenges, and their advice for helping people manage money in the real world. I'm your host, Rachel DeLeon, Executive Director of the Association for Financial Counseling and Planning Education, or AFCPE.
And I'm your co-host, Dr. Mary Bell Carlson, an accredited financial counselor, or AFC, and the president of Financial Behavior Keynote Group. Every episode, we're taking a deep dive in the topics that personal finance professionals care about, helping clients, building community, and your professional growth. John McNamara is the Principal Assistant Director of Markets and the Assistant Director for Consumer Credit, Payments, and Deposit Markets in Research, Markets, and Regulations Division of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. He leads a team of subject matter experts and analysts covering credit cards, payments, deposits, student loans, auto, small dollar marketplace, and installment lending markets, as well as credit reporting, debt consolidation, debt relief, fintech, and the use of artificial intelligence and machine learning in consumer financial services. He also manages budget, staffing, and administration of the Bureau's Markets Office. John is a frequent speaker, panelist, consultant, and author addressing key issues and trends in the financial services industry, and we are thrilled to have him joining us as a keynote speaker this year at AFCPE's symposium. Thanks for joining us today, John.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
John, we're so glad to have you here today, and we're really looking forward to your keynote address this year on the facets of consumer protection. But one of the reasons we love to have our keynote speakers on the show is to get to know them a little bit on a personal level. Would you tell us a little bit about your personal and professional journey and what drew you to this work?
Way back in 1983, when Ronald Reagan was president, I was out of college and was looking for a new job. And I took a job as a collector trainee, mainly because they were willing to train me. So I got into the collections business with a company based out of Phoenix, Arizona, stayed with them for quite a long time and sort of rose through the ranks as a debt collector. And then along that journey as a debt collector, I sort of realized early on that I sort of had a better way to treat consumers who were struggling with their debt. And at one point in my career at this, what was the one point the largest debt collector in the world, Nationwide Credit, I was in charge of writing training and development materials for both collectors and managers. And I was able to put in some ideas about treating consumers with dignity and respect. And I sort of, I guess from the earliest day as a brand new collector, I thought there's a better way to do this. It sort of preserves the dignity of consumers. But anyway, my approach was very successful. I did well with that company, rose through the ranks eventually to senior vice president of retail and markets. And that was for First Data Corporation. They had purchased us. From there, I moved on and did a stint as the chief operating officer for asset management outsourcing, another debt collector, and then actually started my own business like right before the Great Recession and probably the worst possible time to start a business. And it was a small debt collection agency. So I learned what it's like to be a small business owner in the debt collection space. I knew what it was like to be a collector for a large national agency. And then in 2009 or late 2008, I actually joined software, a cloud startup software company called Livevox, and they were a provider of telephony services based on from the cloud. And so it was when cloud was early and scary, and I was their chief marketing officer and did a lot of product development work for them. And even then, I was our main customers were debt collectors and servicers. So as the chief marketing officer, I was really pushing the sort of development of I guess it was pre-reg tech, but we didn't realize it was reg tech, but we were building the software to provide ways for users to sort of adjust to changing compliance. And during that time, the CFPB was Dodd-Frank passed in 2010. The CFPB was on its way to standing up. And I did quite a bit of speaking about what the CFPB might look like and how they'll be a fast learning organization and they'll be a force to be reckoned with. And certainly anyone in the debt collection space or anyone dealing with consumers who are struggling should really pay attention. So as the chief marketing officer at Livevox, and most of my customers who were debt collectors were terrified of the CFPB and what it might mean to their business. And then I guess probably about 2013, I realized that they were thinking about implementing regulation for the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which covers the behaviors of debt collectors. So right about that time, I got a call from a friend of mine who worked at the CFPB. And I guess he wasn't that good of a friend, because at Livebox, we would have been considered a servicer for large market debt collectors. But in 2013, he called me and said, the CFPB wants to talk to you, John, full stop. And he left it hanging there. And I think in that 30 seconds, it was probably only 10, but it felt like 30 seconds or a full minute, I mentally replayed every egregious thing I had done since kindergarten. And then this friend said, listen, I'm leaving the CFPB. I'm the debt collections program manager. This job is ideal for you. You should apply. And so I looked at it, what was entailed in the job. And then I looked at my LinkedIn and I thought, oh my gosh, this job sort of is literally written based on my experience in my professional journey and what I want to do. And so I applied. I got the job. I went home and I said to my wife, what do you think about giving myself a huge pay cut and moving to a higher cost of living city to do policy work? And she looked at me and she said, go for it. And so I did. I applied for the job. Eventually I got it. I started in late June of 2014 as the debt collections program manager, working on Regulation F, working on monitoring and watching for bad behavior and bad consumer outcomes in the debt collection space. And then at the time I thought, wait a minute, I want to deal not just with folks who are dealing with debt collectors, but I'm also interested in any consumer that's sort of facing that tough decision, thinking about bankruptcy. They might be thinking about going to credit repair or for-profit debt settlement or nonprofit consumer credit counselors, that just really, really vulnerable population that's making tough decisions. So we expanded the market monitoring into debt settlement, debt relief while I was there. And then my boss left the CFPB, and my boss at the time, David Silberman, encouraged me to apply for the assistant director job. And it's funny, I really thought I wasn't worthy. It's like David was a Harvard JD. He'd done really well in the credit card industry. He had clerked for Thurgood Marshall. And I'm like, I'm not worthy. And I wasn't even going to apply. And, you know, he encouraged all kinds of great candidates to apply for the job. But then it occurred to me, of all the people at the CFPB, I have probably talked to tens of thousands of at-risk consumers. And so I have a life career experience no one at the Bureau has. So I applied and I got the job and became assistant director. And, you know, roll forward to now, I am the principal assistant director. And by the way, thank you for going through that description of what I do. I know it's a mouthful. I tried to change my title to principal assistant director of markets for everything except mortgage and small business lending. Those are the two areas I don't cover. But the team covers everything else. There was a time where acting was in front of it too. So the title was even longer.
Wow.
And it's funny. So I gave myself a big pay cut, moved to Washington, D.C. It's been 9.5 years. Don't regret it, because I was able to see that the kind of work the team has been able to do in terms of protecting consumers. And I've seen the kind of work the CFPB has done, you know, especially with this current director, Director Chopra. Just all the good work we're doing to try to give consumers a fair shake.
No, that's great. It does cover quite a bit of ground. Now I have to ask, how does the wife feel about this? Is she happy in DC?
We never banked on how much we would like DC. And so my wife works for a nonprofit here in DC, and she may love DC more than I do.
Oh, well, that's a win all the way across then. I love it. Let me ask you, you're coming to this year's symposium. You're going to be one of our keynote speakers there, and you're going to be talking to us about some of the latest research that CFPB has put out. Are there any recent findings that you're excited to share?
Oh my gosh. Well, as you might know from my introduction about my career journey, it's probably hard to shut me up. So be careful. I am really excited about the work that the markets team, as well as the Office of Research, has done, and our Office of Consumer Populations around the impacts of medical debt. And it started with a report that the team put out on medical debt burden. And we used that report to really shine a light on sort of the arbitrary and capricious nature of debt collection trade lines. And what we really wanted to do, the assumptions were that the trade lines were used more as a coercive form of debt collections, and it wasn't like collectors were trying to, you know, bolster the underwriting system or make it more predictive. So we used that report to really talk about how many Americans had these things on their credit reports, how often there are complaints about the accuracy of those. And we also wanted to paint a picture for most Americans, you know, who don't sort of live in policy, that unlike, say, credit card or mortgage information on your credit report, many, many healthcare providers, maybe even most, don't furnish. And so, you know, 99.4% of medical trade lines are furnished by somebody other than the person who owns the debt, which is just this really weird dynamic where the healthcare provider gives the stuff to a debt collector, says, hey, furnish this and just trust me that it's accurate. So we issued that report, and then we followed up on it with some additional research that showed that unlike most trade lines, these trade lines are not persistent. If you thought someone was using it to coerce people to pay, the data basically is completely consistent with that. Smaller balances are more persistent than bigger balances. Most of the balances disappear after a year or two instead of, you know, the 7 years that it takes before most trade lines become obsolescent. And shortly after the report, like the national credit reporting companies, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian announced they were getting rid of half of these things, which was, you know, kind of a jaw-dropping, but also I think cool for consumers. But I think a lot of policymakers were like, well, what about the other half? You know, if the balances under 500 are problematic, what about the balances over? And then if you look, if you've been following what we've been up to, we're in the very early stages of a proposed rulemaking on the Fair Credit Reporting Act that would actually ban the use of medical information for underwriting and the furnishing of that, which you know, maybe could possibly the outcome of that rule could be that all medical debt trade lines are off consumers' credit reports. And during this time, we also noticed that both FICO and VantageScore, the two big providers of scores, were progressively devaluing medical debt anyway. I think realizing that really wasn't predictive of whether a consumer might default in the future. And then VantageScore took a step of going so far, I think, is announcing that its latest versions, version 3.0 and 4.0, would not use medical debt at all in its underwriting. So, but listen, I could go on and on. We're about to release our CARDAC report, which we do every 2 years, which, you know, I think I want to say something like 80 million Americans or more have credit cards, and most of them have multiple cards. But that report is just rich with data for policymakers, including behaviors of debt buyers, debt sellers. I think we've got information on there about sort of the behavior of credit card issuers and their customers by FICO band. So, you know, that's a report the team puts out every 2 years that we're really proud of. And it's big and it's complex. Oh, and buy now, pay later. The team used our 1022 authority to issue a report on the buy now, pay later business. My senior program manager, Laura Udis, and senior fellow Martin Kleinbard drove that work along with the help of Jack Sallows. And it's really probably the only look you can get at the buy now, pay later industry. And to me, I think it's a wonderful use of the 1022 authority that were granted through Dodd-Frank, the ability to look at a new entrant into a space that may have benefit, it may have harm, but actually to gather information and share just what's going on there.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think there's a lot our professionals can learn from all of this research and this findings as they work with their clients as well. I know the buy now, pay later industry, it feels like it came on quickly and you see it everywhere.
Yeah, it really went from 0 to 60 in like 1 second. So, and it's, you know, credit cards have also offered sort of their version of it. As you may know, Apple rolled out Apple Pay in 4. So it's they've actually changed the behavior of some of the incumbents.
John, I'm curious, CFPB works collaboratively with the Federal Trade Commission to coordinate research efforts and protect consumers. Can you tell us a little bit about that relationship?
I was fond of saying when I spoke publicly in my earliest Bureau days, CFPB days, that there was a lot of FTC DNA at the CFPB. And now, you know, roll the clock forward 11 years and or 12 years, and it's sort of both. They've got some of the CFPB DNA. We've got some of theirs. As you know, our current director was a commissioner, the Federal Trade Commission. But we work very, very closely with them, especially on matters of debt settlement, debt collections, credit repair in those areas. And I think we also produce a report each year on the administration of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which we administer along with the Federal Trade Commission. So I would say there's very little daylight between sort of these two cops on the beat when it comes to consumers in a number of areas like credit reporting, like debt collections, like credit repair.
Totally. In fact, it's small. I've lived in the DC world as well, and it's amazing to see how small that world is after a while.
And sometimes I still like, it's been a very, you know, almost a Seinfeldian symmetry sometimes for me. But the second doc in 1983, when I started as a debt collector, the second document I signed was a consent decree from the Federal Trade Commission.
Oh, wow. It's amazing how it all comes full circle.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was in Washington, D.C., and it was her first trip to D.C. This is in 2010. And we literally stumbled onto and of course, during that, as part of my job at Livebox, I've been talking a lot about the CFPB and what it might be like. And I literally stumbled into the press gathering with Senator Dodd and Congressman Frank. You know, it was the day that the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Financial Protection Act was ratified. So, you know, that little did I realize 4 years later, I'd actually be working here.
So let me ask you, the Bureau offers a lot of great resources, not only for consumers, but for financial professionals. Would you recommend someone who's new, maybe give us some ideas of your outline of your resources?
Okay, so for consumers and financial counselors, I couldn't recommend enough the Ask CFPB questions. I think they're really well done. They're well thought out. We update them on a fairly regular basis. So you can go to that site and just ask a question. And there's a wealth of information that's been highly vetted, and it's written really for consumers. But obviously, if you're a counselor, you're interacting with them. I think that's a ready go-to resource for any consumer or any consumer counselor. And if they're a consumer counselor, I would sort of not a web resource, but I'd highly encourage them to reach out to us directly. Between the folks on consumer populations and markets, we have a wealth of subject matter expertise that we absolutely, I mean, not only we love sharing it, we kind of feel like it's our job.
John, one question we ask at the end of every interview is to share their 2 cents. If you had one piece of advice to leave with our listeners, what would it be?
Yeah, I'd say you're not alone. I mean, consumers that are struggling, I think it's a lonely place. Some collectors will even try to make them feel like they're the only person in the world who owes $500 to, you know, this hospital or that payday lender. Lots of people owe, lots of people are struggling. You're in really good company, and there's lots and lots of help, and there's lots and lots of people that want to help you.
I love that. Great advice.
John, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Will you tell our listeners where they can connect with you?
My email is john.mcnamara@cfpb.gov. Counselors who are sort of interacting with the kind of people that we were stood up to take care of, they have sort of firsthand knowledge of what's going on out there in terms of bad behaviors and good behaviors. So we enjoy hearing what they're hearing to give us sort of an early tell on what kind of risk might be coming down the road for consumers.
Yeah. And John, where do you recommend counselors share some of that feedback with you?
I would say they can email us directly. We actually have an Office of Public Engagement too that sets up meetings regularly where we gather together folks who have that experience to share it with us. And my office, along with the Office of Research, we spend a lot of time thinking about what consumer balance sheets look like and how they're faring. You know, the obviously student loans repayments just started. That's for 44 million consumers. You've got the interest rates that are really, really high on top of record high credit card balances. So it just seems like there's a lot of stressors on consumers' balance sheets.
Well, and I think you're in for a treat just next month. When you come to the symposium, we have a really engaged and excited community, and I know they're going to be looking forward to hearing more about the research that the Bureau is doing, and we'll be eager to talk to you directly. So we're really thrilled that you're going to make it.
I'm excited to share, and I'm excited to learn at that event. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on today.
It was my pleasure.
Mary, I'm really looking forward to John's session at the AFCPE Symposium this year. I think it's really important for our professionals and our community, you know, to really engage with the CFPB, to hear about the work that is going on in the field, to hear about the data and the research that they're doing, the protective measures that they have in place, and to really engage one-on-one with the Bureau. They come every year to provide resources. And in terms of their FinEx community, I know they're a great source of knowledge and resource to our community. But I think, you know, going a little bit deeper and hearing about some of the trends is going to be really important. One of the things I really liked about John, his history is really interesting. You know, he's boots on the ground in the debt collection industry, but he also, I really like his lens of preserving the dignity of consumers. And I think that really resonates with the work that our community does. It will be really interesting to kind of hear about a lot of these things at the symposium this November.
I agree. I appreciate John's transparency, honestly. I feel like he's very reachable. It's trying to do the best he can and have as much boots on the ground, as he mentioned, to be able to help. And I appreciate that government agencies open and willing to listen to consumers and really the day-to-day struggles that everyday consumers are going through. I also look forward to hearing about the resources. You know, he gave us a very high level of maybe some ways to reach out, and I'm looking forward to in the symposium maybe getting a little more tactical and getting some direct resources that you can put into play as financial professionals with your clients. We hope to see you soon this year at AFCPE Symposium in New Orleans.